Frank Muir goes into medicine and investigates the humor of the profession with the help of Alfred Marx.
A plastic surgeon dozed off in front of the fire and melted. A man rushed into a psychiatrist with a parrot on his head. "Doctor, doctor," said the parrot, "get this man off my feet." A doctor talking to a man with a wooden leg. "I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but you have woodworm in your right leg."
"That's funny."
"Why?"
"That's not the wooden one." "Doctor, doctor."
"What is it?"
"This swelling on my leg. If it gets any bigger, I won't be able to get my trousers on."
"Oh, well, take this."
"What is it?"
"A prescription for a kilt." A doctor went on holiday and left his son in charge of the practice. When he came back, he asked, "How things been?" "Oh, fine," said the boy. "I've been doing very well. You know that millionaire fellow, you know, Wilberforce? Well, I've cured his ulcer." "You fool," said the father. "That ulcer paid for your education."
"Ah, oh, Mr. Winthrop, you're coughing more easily this morning."
"I should be. I've been practicing all night." "Doctor, doctor, where shall I put my clothes?"
"Just there, on top of mine." There's a hint of nervousness in our jokes about the medical profession. We have a nasty suspicion that the doctors may have the last word. As a result, many unkind things have been said about doctors. Let's go right back to the Bible. 2 Chronicles 16, verse 12.
"Asa was diseased in his feet until his disease was exceedingly great. Yet in his disease he sought not to the Lord, but to the physicians. And Asa slept with his fathers."
From a Greek anthology.
"Yesterday, Dr. Marcus went to see the statue of the god Zeus. Though Zeus and though marble, we're burying the statue today."
Addison, writing in The Spectator, 1711.
"If we look into the profession of physic, we shall find a most formidable body of men. The sight of them is enough to make a man serious, for we may lay it down as a maxim that when a nation abounds in physicians, it grows thin of people."
While we're healthy or only suffering from our normal minor ailments, it's easy to criticise the medical profession for their incompetence or inability to share our own fascination for the little things we have wrong with us. But in a crisis, our view changes suddenly, as John Owen observed in the early 17th century.
"God and the doctor we alike adore, but only when in danger, not before. The danger o'er, both are alike requited. God is forgotten, and the doctor slighted."
Most people resent their potential dependence on doctors, and so laugh off the possibility. It's just bravado. But the result is that the doctor's waiting room and surgery are two of the most popular settings in the world for jokes. I suppose it's because we've all been through it. Here's Frankie Howard's experience.
How are you? You all right? I don't feel, you know, I'm usually sort of, you know, but I don't know, I suppose it must be, you know, I don't feel the, I don't know, mind you, no, I think it's this, don't you? And of course, I mean, mind you, haven't come into hear my troubles. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you've got troubles of your own. I mean, you haven't come into hear my troubles. But I mean, all this. Tell how it started. I tell how it started now. No, listen. You see, I went to the doctor's. It was yesterday, Sunday. No, Tuesday, week. I went to this doctor's. I went to the doctor's, and I went in the evening to the doctor's. You see, I go in the evening because it gives his hands a chance to warm up. So, well, I mean, you know. So, no fuss, eh? First thing in the morning, woo! So anyway, so I went round, and I wasn't poorly. Ladies and gentlemen, I wasn't poorly, actually. I wasn't poorly, but you see, I live next door to this doctor, and he had his car parked in front of our house, and I thought, I'm sorry, you'll have to move it, you see, because we were expecting the dust cart, and I thought, I'm sorry, you've got to get in, you see, and you have to be ruthless, you have to be ruthless. So I went into his surgery, you see, and packed out, it was packed out. All these people sat round the walls, you know, and these so coughing and spluttering. And I was sat there reading the Undertaker's Weekly, you know, you know, by the time I got in to see him, I felt worse than they did. You know you do.
Illness is a morbid fascination for most of us, however much we pretend otherwise. There's also a danger of thinking that our own ailments hold the same fascination for other people. A bore has been defined as a man who, on being asked how he is, tells you. In fact, other people's illnesses are about as interesting as other people's holidays. But for some, health remains a sort of major preoccupation. They're bothered about their health. Hypochondria lurks beneath the surface in most of us, and doctors have to expend a lot of time and patience on imagined ills. It reminds Alfred and me of the story of the hypochondriac who went to a champagne party. We thought we'd wait for about 5 seconds. Give it up. Never mind. There's a very popular form of joke in which someone rushes into the doctor's surgery with some imagined and extremely unlikely ailment.
Doctor! Doctor!
What is it?
Doctor, it's terrible. I've got roses growing out of my ear. Lots and lots of roses.
Oh, no, come on. Come along. Don't be ridiculous. Roses in your ear? Where could they have come from?
I don't know. There wasn't a card.
He was on the way from a champagne party because he was... then again.
Doctor, doctor, I think I'm changing my sex.
What are you getting in return? Or, doctor, doctor, what can I do about falling hair?
Step to one side.
In reality, of course, doctors are usually understanding, but in humour, they're sometimes painted to be rather callous.
Next, please. Come along, come along. We haven't got all day. Come on. Right. Drop them. Now take your trousers off.
They are off, sir.
So they are. In that case, your legs need pressing. Now, can you touch your toes?
No, sir.
Well, how do you wash them then, you dirty little brute? I'm grubbing around my surgery with your filthy feet. Well, if you can't touch your toes, your arms must be too short. You just have to let them out a bit at the elbows. Now, come over here. Now, take this bottle. You know what to do with it, don't you?
Yes, sir, I do.
Good. There's the ship, and I want it finished by Tuesday. And if you find that too difficult, you can put the ship in the bottle. Right, now. Now, can you read this card?
Oh, yes, sir.
Well?
It says APG XRI 8439 DMFRH.
It's from my aunt in Brighton. She must be out of her mind. She hasn't been the same since Mafeking. Right, well, thank you. Off you go, then.
But what about my checkup?
Oh, yes. Now, have you got a temperature?
Oh, yes, sir. 106.
That's a bit high. Better call it 98. Now, let's see. Breathing. Do you breathe?
Yes, quite frequently, actually.
Well, breathe in, then. Breathe out again. Breathe in. Blow out. In. Out. Faster. In. Out. In. Out. Keep blowing. Sorry I have to make you do this, but the electric fan's broken down. Right, that'll do. Now, how do you feel? Yes, that's quite normal. Thank you. Now, take your shirt off.
Oh, no, I can't.
Yes, I know it's embarrassing. I know, I'll take mine off too. No, no, I've got a better idea. I'll go behind this screen.
Thank you very, very much, sir. Thank you indeed, sir.
Is it off now?
Yes, sir.
Well, put it back on. I want to come out. Right, now, eyes, feet, nose, ribs. Well, I think you've got the full set.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Oh, I know. Teeth. Open your mouth. Wider. 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 Oh, pick him out. Let me see him. Are they comfortable?
Oh, yes, sir. Very comfortable.
Okay, well, I think I'll keep these, then. No, don't worry. I'll put you on liquid foods. Anyway, it'll do you good to diet. You've put on a bit of weight since I last treated you, haven't you? What did I treat you for?
Nappy rash. Nappy rash.
Still troubling you?
No.
John Cleese and Bill Oddie. In reality, as well as in jokes, the doctor's surgery can be the setting for humour. Here's an example from the Daily Mirror.
There were four of us in the doctor's waiting room when in walked a Pakistani. He was about to go straight into the surgery when a woman jumped up and grabbed his arm, saying in very deliberate English, "We are before you. You take your turn. Understand?" The Pakistani, in equally deliberate English, replied, "No, you are after me. Me, doctor. Understand?"
There are many different sorts of doctor, of course, from the hard-working GP to the quack to the exclusive surgeon who pampers his rich clientele. George Bernard Shaw put it,
"A doctor's reputation is made by the number of eminent men who die under his care."
And as a quack doctor, it seems to have been about forever. There have always been mountebanks selling the elixir of life and cure for all ills. One of them in 1710 advertised pills which was supposed to be good against the earthquake. The quack's a very popular figure in comic literature. In Ben Jonson's Volpone, the name character disguises himself as a doctor and delivers a splendid spiel for his all-curing oil.
"This rare extraction hath only power to disperse all malignant humours that proceed either of hot, cold, moist or windy causes, to fortify the most indigest and crude stomach, for the vertigine in the head, putting but a drop into your nostrils, likewise behind the ears, a most sovereign and approved remedy, the mal caduco, cramps, convulsions, paralyses, epilepsies, tremor cordia, retired nerves, ill vapours of the spleen, stopping of the liver, the stone, the stanguary, hernia ventosa, iliac apatio, stops a dysentery immediately, easeth the torsion of the small guts, and cures melancholia hypochondriaca. It will cost you 8 crowns.
There are still quacks around today, and many strange medicines which rely on the superstition and credulity of their purchasers more than their contents. But whatever kind of doctor he's dealing with, everyone feels it is his right to pass judgment and criticise. Here are the Garnet family.
"Don't talk to me about a specialist. 3 hours I wait to see that toffee nose git. And when I finally get in to see him, he's only teaching all his students on me, that's all. He's only taking them on a conducted tour around all me organs. Drawing all over me throat like it was a blooming diagram or something. And on top of all that, he starts making personal remarks about me. Tell everybody how bad I spoke and how I speaks out of me throat instead of out of me abdomen. Your abdomen, your belly, girl, your belly.
How can you talk out your belly?
Look, your vocal cords is like violin strings, see? It's like a lot of catgut here in your neck, see?
Ooh.
See, now look, what happens when you want to say something? You think of a thought to say up in your brain, didn't you? See? Now, a message is conveyed down all your passages, down your vocal cords in here. And they start wobbling about like that.
Well,
now, them wobbling about like that throws the sound up into the mouth, what's like a loudspeaker, well, throws the sound out to the ear holes of the people what's listening to you. That's how your voice works.
Like the wireless?
Yeah, something like the wireless.
Only with the wireless, at least you can turn it off. Didn't he give you nothing for that eye?
Don't talk to me about black eye. Ugh.
Them National Health doctors, they don't know nothing, they don't.
What are you talking about? All the doctors are on the National Health now.
Yeah, well, more's the pity, mate, because when they was all private and you felt a bit dicky and went up the doctors, all you had to bung in was half a crown. And if you didn't like what he was doing for you, it was your prerogative to take your half a crown elsewhere. See? But nowadays, oh yeah, under your National Health, you not only got to pay your doctor hell of a lot more, you got to pay him every week whether you're ill or not.
Nah, don't talk so wet, will you? Hey, anyway, listen, what would have happened, say you hadn't got half a dollar to bung him then, eh? What did you do then? What did you do, eh?
Then you went to see the chemist, because some of them would do it for 1 and 6.
Never mind all the rabbit, go and get my tea on.
No, it's not rabbit, it's a nice pork chop.
Anyway, the National Health's been a blessing to a lot of people.
What?
Yeah.
A blessing, National Health?
Yeah.
Get out of it. They don't use it, do they, mate?
Who?
Them, your lot, the Labour Party, the lot what brought it in.
Oh,
what? You can just... Oh, yes, I am, Ulf. Just you listen. You just imagine old Harold Wilson and his oppos, old Brown, old Callaghan, sitting up there in a National Health hospital, can't you, waiting for 3 hours? They ain't drinking their National Health tea and eating their rotten fly-blown National Health sandwiches. You're laughing at your great git the minute they they're straight up to Harley Street, ain't they? Up to your Lord Morons. That's where they go.
Till death do us part. If you don't like what your doctor tells you, you can consult another. But a second opinion may not help. Joseph Jekyll, in the early 19th century, wrote...
See one physician, like a sculler plies, the patient lingers and by inches dies. But two physicians, like a pair of oars, waft him more swiftly to the Stygian shores.
Often there isn't much choice of doctors available in hospitals. Hospitals get very full, and there's a serious shortage of beds. Here's a report from the Times about the problem in maternity hospitals.
I'm sorry, sir, a colleague was told by one Midland maternity hospital in September, but if your wife needs a bed in March, it should have been booked 10 months in advance.
A little mind-boggling there. Hospitals are very popular for both romantic novels and comedy. I suppose it's a strange combination of people who all come together in a hospital. Patients, doctors, nurses, and of course the visitors. Those people who come and eat the patient's grapes until the bell rings. At least that's how they always behave in jokes. But in fact, visiting someone in hospital is a very noble act.
I was just thinking about poor old Albert in hospital. He's been there a month and nobody has been to see him.
Oh, no. All in that shotgun, that poor old devil.
Nobody's been near him. He's just lying there.
That makes you feel really rotten, doesn't it?
Poor old Albert.
Well, you look, why don't we go and see him this afternoon? We got nothing to do.
Oh, it's a long way, isn't it?
Tony Hancock and Sid James. From the point of view of jokes, probably the most important ingredient in a hospital is the nursing staff. The joke nurse is always, of course, extremely beautiful. Indeed, some of the real ones are, too. And she spends all the time fighting off the advances of the doctors and the male patients, or not fighting them off, including the sort of joke you like. Alfred, let's have a few typical nurse jokes.
There was a man who'd been in hospital for some time, and he fell for the very beautiful nurse who looked after him. One morning, as she was making his bed, he said, "Nurse, I'm in love with you. I don't want to get well." "Don't worry," she said, "you won't. The doctor's in love with me too, and he saw you kissing me." "Give us a kiss, nurse." "Certainly not." "Ah, come on, nurse, it won't hurt you. Just a little kiss." "I should think not. Strictly speaking, I'm not supposed to be in bed with you." "Mr. Smith, would you bounce up and down on your bed, please?"
"Why, nurse?"
"I forgot to shake the bottle before I gave you your medicine."
"Nurse! Nurse! I'm at death's door!"
"Don't worry, the doctor will pull you through."
And so, ad infinitum. There will always be nurse jokes and nurse novels and nurse films and nurse television series. It must be the antiseptic sex appeal of that crackly uniform. But romantic attachments in hospitals can lead to terrible complications.
Scalpel.
Scalpel.
Gauze.
Gauze.
More gauze.
More gauze.
My guys.
My guys.
My guys.
My guys.
None of my guys.
We don't have any more guys.
That's all the guys?
Yeah. I don't know what happened. We had a small roll of guys.
Bring me a sponge.
Sponge.
Clamp.
You have the clamp.
Suture.
We have a suture.
Edith.
Yes?
I love you.
Please, please.
Sponge.
You have the sponge.
Bring me another sponge. I want
you
two
have
sponges.
All the sponges.
I have two sponges.
We don't. We only have two sponges.
Edith, this is terrible when we wrangle this way.
But
why do you avoid me?
We have two sponges.
Why do you avoid me in the hall?
I don't avoid you in the hall.
You turned your back at the coffee machine.
I didn't turn my back.
You deliberately turned your back.
Excuse me, the oxygen's failing.
But it's not failing for subject.
But it's failing.
Well, turn it up.
Well, I'm trying to.
Is there somebody else?
Is there something you'd like? A suture? Sponge? Something?
Is there somebody else?
I don't care to discuss it now.
It's Pinsky, isn't it?
I don't care to talk about it.
I saw you in the cafeteria.
I just don't care to talk about it, Dr. Harris. Now, would you like anything else? Otherwise, I'd like to go.
Go in the middle of an operation?
Well, I have nothing else to hand you. You've got it all in the patient.
What have I done to hurt you this way?
You haven't done anything to hurt me. I just wish you wouldn't badger me.
Badger you?
I need time to think. I told you that before.
I don't know you like this. You're cold. You're diffident.
Because you badger me.
I haven't badgered
you. You're only making me run away.
Is it badgering you to tell you I love you? Is that badgering you?
Please do not tell me over and over in the cafeteria and operations.
All right, I'm sorry. Give me a needle.
Needle.
Thread.
Would you like me to thread the needle?
I don't even know what I'm doing. Yes, thread it, please.
All right. Catgut?
Yes.
Cheer up. Come on, I have a little joke for you. Knock, knock.
Oh.
Come on. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Catgut.
Catgut who?
Catgut your tongue? Oh, come on.
Edith, why are you torturing me?
I'm not. I was trying to cheer you up.
Well, there's only one way you can cheer me up, and that's to say yes.
Please, please, Dr. Harris, not now. This is how you drive me away every time.
Put your finger on this knot, please.
All right, but don't do anything funny.
I'm not doing anything funny. I'm sewing up the patient. Now it's you who starts these things.
All right, all right.
Oh, I do love you so.
Oh, please, please, let go of my finger. I knew you were going to do this.
Please, no, don't pull back. I do. I love you. I love you.
Let go of my finger.
Don't pull back. You're pulling the steel.
Please, Dr. Harris, stop.
Edith, it is Pinsky, isn't it?
I don't want to talk about it now.
It's very important to me to know whether it's Pinsky or not.
Give me time to check. Now the oxygen is failing again.
Let it fail. I'm sick of this torture.
Please sew, Dr. Harris. Everyone is looking at you.
I'm not going to finish this operation unless you say yes.
Dr. Harris, you're being impossible.
I'm not going to finish this operation unless you say yes, Edith.
Dr. Harris, this patient will die.
I've been tortured long enough. Yes or no, which is it going to be?
This is absolute blackmail.
I don't care. I don't care what lengths I go to anymore. All is fair and all that.
Dr. Harris, you're a doctor. A doctor. Doesn't that mean anything to you,
yes,
a surgeon?
I'm a doctor, Edith, but I'm a man also, and I will not go on with this operation until you give me your answer, and it better be yes.
I have no choice. Yes.
All right, then. Clamp, darling.
Mike Nichols and Elaine May. That operating theatre comedy routine of the scalpel, scalpel, swab, swab was a great old standby in the old days of Take It From Here. His one we did about 140 years ago. Scalpel.
Scalpel.
Swab.
Swab.
Saw.
Saw. Sir, the patient's coming round.
Circular saw. Oh, that applause is music in the ears. Jokes are useful for keeping the facts of hospitals and surgeries at arm's length. No one really wants to be ill. But there are ways of helping the cause of medicine without suffering at all, personally. There's always the opportunity to give blood for others.
May I have your card, please?
By all means, I'm ready when you are, Squire.
Good. Well, hold out your hand, please. Now, this won't hurt. You'll just feel a slight prick on the end of your finger.
Oh! Where's the centre? Dear, oh dear. Well, that's that. I'll have me a cup of tea and me biscuit now. Nothing to it, is there, really? I can't understand why everybody doesn't do it. Well, I'll bid you good day. Thanks very much. Whenever you want any more, don't hesitate to get in touch with me.
Where are you going?
Have me tea and biscuits.
I thought you came here to give some of your blood.
You've just had it.
This is just a smear.
It may be just a smear to you, mate, but it's life and death for some poor wretch.
No. I've just taken a small sample to test.
A sample? How much do you want, then?
Well, a pint, of course.
A pint? Have you gone raving mad? Oh, well, of course. I mean, you must be joking.
A pint is a perfectly normal quantity to take.
You don't seriously expect me to believe that. I mean, I came in here in all good faith to help me country. I don't mind giving a reasonable amount, but a pint? Well, that's very nearly an armful. I'm sorry, I'm not walking about with an empty arm for anybody. I mean, I'm sure. A joke's a joke, and you've
Mr. Hancock, obviously you don't know very much about the workings of the human body. You won't have an empty arm, or an empty anything. Blood is circulating all the time. Normal, healthy individual can give a pint of blood without any ill effects whatsoever. You do have 8 pints, you know.
Now, look, chum, everybody do his own trade, I grant you. But if I've got 8 pints, obviously I need 8 pints, and not 7. As I will have by the time you've finished with me. No, I'm sorry, I've been misinformed. I've made a mistake. I'll do something else. I'll be a traffic warden.
Well, of course, I can't force you to donate your blood, but it's a great shame. You're AB negative.
Is that bad?
Oh, no. You're rhesus positive.
Rhesus? They're monkeys, aren't they? How dare you? What are you implying? I didn't come here to be insulted by a legalized vampire.
Mr. Hancock, that is your blood group, AB negative. It's one of the rarest groups there is.
Really?
Yes, it is. Very rare indeed.
Oh, well, of course, I mean, I'm not surprised. I've always felt instinctively I was somehow different from the rest of the herd, you know. Something apart, I never fitted into society. I've never belonged, if you know what I mean. The contact was never there. I was always a bit of an outsider. Well, that explains it. AB negative. I'm one of nature's aristocrats.
Yes, I really think you ought to reconsider your decision.
Yes, well, of course, this does throw a different complexion on the matter. Well, I mean, if I am one of the few sources, one doesn't like to hog it all, so to speak. I'm not unchristian. Very rare, eh?
Yes, and I assure you there'll be no ill effects. I mean, you'll make up the deficiency in no time at all.
Oh, well, in that case, I'll do it. I mean, we AB negatives must stick together. A minority group like us, we could be persecuted.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Mr. Hancock.
Tony Hancock and Patrick Cargill. I think we've got time for one last operating theatre routine. Alfred?
Scalpel.
Scalpel.
Alcohol.
Alcohol.
Clamp.
Clamp.
Alcohol.
Alcohol.
Swab.
Swab.
Alcohol.
Alcohol.
What and call? Cotton wool.
Cotton wool.
Alcohol.
Alcohol.
A funny round thing with a bit sticking up.
Funny round thing with a bit sticking up.
Taxi.
Taxi! Taxi! Well, that's it. Next week, we'll be going into the theatre. Until then, from Alfred Marx and me, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Frank Muir Goes Into Medicine was produced by Simon Brett and Bob Oliver Rogers.